Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday, until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 165 for September 17th, 2014, DXing around the world. Hi, good evening, and welcome to another action-packed episode of Ham Nation. Coming to us live from Costa Mesa this evening is our friend Gordo. Say hello, Gordo.
Hello, Gordo, and we'll see everybody in Peoria Superfest this weekend. Back to you, George.
Oh, thanks, Gordo. And we've got Don Wilbanks down to my south a little bit. He'll be bringing us some news later on. Don, has it been hot down there this week?
Yes, it has. Hot and humid and nasty. And I don't know. I'm having a hard time coping. Look, I'm rocking it old school. I got the old goal line microphone here tonight.
So, oh, wow. Shiny.
Yeah, exactly.
And we've got Val with us. And speaking of weather, Val, you know a little bit about that now, don't you?
I do. But it's been gorgeous here in Illinois. But I'm getting ready. We're heading to Chicago this weekend for W9DXCC. It's not too late if you guys want to go. And then Bob Heil and I will be at W4DXCC the following weekend. So a lot of stuff on the horizon going on here.
Cool. Well, speaking of Bob Heil, he's not here this week. And we believe he'll be out for the next couple of weeks. But he'll be with us when we get together up in Petaluma at the Twit Brick House just before Pacificon, and we'll have a good time up there. And we're going to have Amanda with us a little bit later in the show for the chat room. So get your questions into her, and we'll do a little follow-up at the end here and see what's on your mind. Well, right now, let's go back out to Gordo. I know you've got some important announcements for us, Gordo.
Hey, we do. It's going to be a hot time this week in Southern California, about 100 degrees. So we're not going to tonight, but we will next week talk about incandescent light bulbs. We're going to talk about the CFL light bulbs and the noise they generate. We're going to talk about the new LED light bulbs that also generate noise. And then we finally found it, a light bulb, an LED 60 watt dimmable that creates no noise, at least none that I could pick up with a spectrum analyzer. So that'll be next week when conditions are cooler out here in Southern California. All right, we'll see everybody this Friday in Peoria for our Instructor Academy class all day Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday at Superfest in Peoria, while Chicago is going to have its DX get-together. Westchester Amateur Radio Association in Ohio will be talking from the Voice of America HQ setup, and London, Ontario this weekend. So plenty of things happening this weekend. All right. Well, it's good to have Brian back. And Brian, if you don't mind, let's go ahead and go to Short Shots and also talk about this weekend is the 10,000 megahertz, 10 gigahertz microwave activity weekend part two. And we have microwave enthusiasts all the way from coast to coast, and this is an ARRL-sponsored event. This, too, will be going on this weekend, as well as the ICOM get-together on D-Star, the ICOM D-Star QSO party. Wow, things happening. Well, let's talk about things that hopefully won't happen. It did out here in Southern Cal with all of our fires, and that is ham radio operators preparing their served agency for volunteer communications. Whether it's civil defense, whether it's RACES or ARRIES, we all should have a grab-and-go kit. One with wheels makes it easier for you to go from your vehicle in the background all the way to the EOC or wherever they're going to have you set up. And of course, inside the big bag is a big battery. And to the left is a new battery breed, lithium iron phosphate, much lighter than that heavy battery behind the radio you see in the yellow case. But you should be, as an emergency communicator, able to set up in just 2 to 3 minutes and get on the air. We see in the background that we had an analog voltmeter, but these new inexpensive voltmeters are great. They measure both current as well as voltage, and the readout is absolutely radio quiet. All emergency communicators should use Anderson connectors. Here's the Anderson power pole bar for serving many hams that will come with their emergency setup to pipe in their 12 volts. Some hams will use the swedge tool to crimp them. I like to solder them because sometimes I don't have just the right size Anderson connector. So soldering makes sure that that wire is not going to pull out. And regularly exercise your Andersons, because if you don't use them, they get gummed up, and at low current, it'll be an intermittent connection. Here we see one of the emergency setups at a public safety day out in Southern California, actually this past weekend. And notice we have APRS rolling. But take a look at the left-hand side of the Kenwood. Notice we're on 144.370 rather than 390, the national APRS. Well, that's on purpose, so we're not repeated out and clogging the network as we're walking around in our five block area. So, yes, APRS is handy, but you don't need to clog all the main channel with your comms. Go to an alternate frequency, at least 20 kilohertz away. And we have the base station. That's Tom W6WC. He is ready to start dispatching for the big event. And good hams and good dispatchers, when you're in with a lot of other folks, will have a set of earphones so you don't miss a call. These come from C. Crane, and they're very comfortable after being in your ear for all day. There's Dave and Tina, and they're thinking about Rusty, and so are we, Dave and Tina. And there is their, look at that setup. I'm not sure if that's theirs or Tracy's, but it's ready to roll. And that's quite a nice emergency setup. We encourage all of you to get one like that. A headset, there's a Heil headset. And if you're doing logging via computer, you can keep the noise out and keep your comms to yourself. And there you go. Or, like I do, the old-fashioned logbook. And in the field, look at this. This is a waterproof logbook. And that waterproof logbook will give you more information about it next week. But you can dunk it underwater, and none of your scrawls are going to go away. You need a good 60 dB gain antenna, dual band, and just put it out so no one trips over the cable. And there we have it poised, ready for our event this past weekend. All of our folks serving our city, we're walking around with APRS squawking on 144.37. There's Larry, our chief radio officer for Santa Ana Response Teams, got that radio, and that's going to work fine on his belt up to about 5 to 10 blocks away. And, of course, the Kenwood is revealing exactly where everybody is. That's fed to the AVMAP. There's the Kenwood, and it's on automatic beacon, and every one or a couple of minutes, not on the national channel, but on 144.370, it's spotting my location along the parade route. So this is important as emergency communicators, so your base station knows where everybody is without having to call you every couple of minutes. There you see my ID down there on the bottom. There's Jim, another one showing the vehicle. So APRS is good. If you're in a mobile unit squawking APRS, wow, look at this, all the better. And that is Chameleon. That is his setup. And he's got everything in there, including digital and a battery backup as well. And a good emergency communicator always has solar panels, and deploy those solar panels, and that way you'll be off the grid. You can see the waterproof boxes in the background. Well, we set up, and the police department brought in all of these radios for the extra security troops, and they said, you guys will handle the radios as well. We've never even seen these Motorola radios. So first thing Dennis did was he got them all on the charger. They were on a business band frequency. He made sure that they were all charged up. He then started a logbook to log them out to the security personnel coming in. Hey, this wasn't our job, but as a good ham, you got to be flexible. You got to take the assignment. We found out what frequency they were on, not by removing the battery and not finding the frequency list, but by a plain old frequency counter. Well, this happens to be reading another frequency, not on the land mobile band, but on the marine radio band. But you get the idea. The counter showed it at 151.625, and that's a very popular itinerant channel for all these handhelds. And we had a PA system to talk to our troops ready to go out there, and the mic cord wasn't long enough, but we carry the Heil Bluetooth microphone setup, plugged it into the amp, and it worked just great. Now, here's something that we're looking for you, our viewers, to get more information on, and that is the capabilities of the quadcopters, or in this case, five or six blades on this guy. But we need to talk more about how volunteers can add to ham radio in an emergency. And I know that they did it up in Wine Country a few weeks ago after the earthquake up in Napa. But this will give you a good idea. So if you got ideas, I would sure like to see a video on that coming up here on Ham Nation. Good uniforms. And as you can see, you can spot those yellow uniforms quite a distance. You want to be dressed professionally when serving your served city or EOC. There is Corky all dressed up. And you can always spot where your personnel are by those distinctive uniforms. So when the crowd begins to build, there you go. So good uniforms are a very important point to have. In fact, look at this. I mean, that demands some acknowledgement. And he's just a volunteer as well, but he's looking pretty darn sharp. Hey, look at that. Well, there's one in uniform and toasting some marshmallows on the Barbie. That's the San Bernardino ECS team. And there's Pat, KF6PFW. He's all in uniform. He's got the headset on. He's ready to calm without having to do anything. Here's my official uniform in the middle of a rainstorm. This ham up on a very rainy day on Catalina Island had no problem staying dry. He deployed his little parachute sheet. The speaker microphones or the earphone mics are very good. But before you go out on the field, you want to make sure that the mic gain is set properly. Sometimes they're too hot and all you hear is background noise. I'm happy to say that Dennis, STF, was able to stay in touch and his mic gain was just right. Very simple earphone to talk. He holds it up and he's good to go. We had to turn that down a little bit a year or so ago, and now it's absolutely perfect. Most radios will accept the speaker microphone or, in this case, the earphone and the little microphone bud. And there's Patrick and Tom, and they're standing tall as they're getting ready. And it was so noisy that you could barely talk to each other, but via the radio, you could hear well. Notice Tom on the right's got the little earbud and little coily cord. Patrick's got his whole setup on the other side. So as ham operators, we need to be able to serve our city and be ready when the big one hits. And to do that, we need to train doing just regular events. We call them real event drills. And to be a good operator serving your city, train regularly. Get out there in the field, as these folks have done, and have fun playing ham radio because the real one is coming. All right, George, back to you.
Well, thanks, Gordo. That is some good information there, because you never know when you're going to need to be prepared for something like that. So getting some things together in advance, particularly those nice, snazzy uniforms y'all have there, I like that. And you, I saw you standing out there in the rain, and there were these little white houses behind you. Were those ham shacks sitting back there?
Absolutely, yes. In an emergency, you can use any type of shelter. Just be sure the lid is down before you sit down if you're playing ham radio. Over.
All right, thanks, Gordo. Well, now let's go to Don and get some information about DX Engineering.
I'm not exactly sure I can even follow that, but the air is getting a little cooler out there. Probably not in those not in those little white houses, but cooler outside nonetheless, which means Mother Nature's clocking out. Old Man Winter is clocking in, and it's getting to be antenna season. So make sure you're ready to handle the snow and the ice if you have that to deal with. Of course, down here in South Mississippi, we don't. But DX Engineering has whatever you need, no matter where you live, for your antenna building gear to keep your installation performing well in the sub-zero temperatures, if you have those. After all, you don't want to spend all season off the air, for sure. Rely on DX Engineering's professional quality antenna building parts. They have Cycle 24 galvanized economy saddle clamps. They're perfect for repairs and projects. They're value priced, yet they'll give you years of outdoor service. Includes a serrated flange nuts, U-bolt, and a saddle. Tubing sizes from 1 1/4 up to 3 inches, so whatever you need there. Also, quality aluminum tubing to build or repair an antenna. It's strong, it's durable, it's lightweight, it's from DX Engineering. Many, many lengths, multiple outside diameters, size to telescope smoothly together. So that's kind of cool, either slit or non-slit on the ends, depending on your clamping or telescoping application. And it's the perfect tubing, no matter what you're looking for. If you're looking for maximum strength, even at long assembly lengths, this is the good stuff. Fiberglass tubing, great antenna supports. And this fiberglass tubing is available separately or in handy kits that are perfectly matched in the components to let you erect a mast without having to assemble a long shopping list. Just let DX Engineering take care of everything you need. If you're looking to build your tower and antenna system before the weather gets cold, DX Engineering chrome moly masts. Boy, that's a fine place to start. Shipping is easy, affordable, and hassle-free. The masts are super strong, perfectly suited to amateur radio applications. DXEngineering.com has everything you need. And use the exclusive free mast load estimator design tool to get exactly what you need. 2 or 3 inch outside diameters, 1/4 inch wall thickness, extra rigidity. They're sold in 22-foot sections. Galvanized steel masts have a coating that meets the all the right ASTM A123/M specifications, whatever that means. But it's good stuff, and they've got it at DX Engineering. They're built to handle big old antennas, too. You've seen the big DX Engineering stuff. That's perfect for that. Certified yield strength rating over 100,000 PSI minimum. Rockwell hardness of 96. This is quality stuff. And right now, shipping is only $109 to the lower 48. Also, Rhone Towers and Accessories, yeah, DX Engineering has that as well. Make sure your antenna is ready to face another winter. And remember, DX Engineering ships very quickly. Get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern. If it's in stock, it'll be on a truck headed your way tonight. Proven products, expert advice, the fastest shipping in the industry. That is DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. Grab your catalog, shop online 24/7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. dxengineering.com/hamnation. DX Engineering, thank you so much for your support of Ham Nation. It is good stuff. George, what's going on with the smoke and solder tonight? Do we have something from K7AGE, perhaps?
We do, Don. Randy got us a video together here. This is him putting together a portable kit. And let's just go ahead and take a look at it.
Hello, Randy, K7AGE. I got a bunch of stuff here on my workbench. So what I have here is my Yaesu FT817 radio. I have this case from Amp3. And what this is, it's an FT817 field case, 7 amp hour, 12 volt battery, and it shoves all the way down in the back here, and there's a piece that blocks that. The radio fits in there in front of it, and on the other side of the case is a compartment which folds open. A tube here you can put coax adapters in, has enough room you can roll up some coax, as well as this genius G3500 charger. And this can charge 6 or 12 volt batteries. And it comes, of course, it plugs into the wall. But it has a lot of cable here that I really don't need. I'm going to cut this here and put a pair of power poles on so I can power pole this cable back together or power pole it into the battery for direct charging. And I also bought this little Turnigy load analyzer. Yeah, precision watt meter and power analyzer. Model 130A. So I bought this from Hobby King. This is just screaming to have some power poles put on that so you can plug it between your battery and your load. That's the project to kind of get all this kind of put together to make it a lot more useful. First thing is to make up the power cable for the battery. The battery is going to fit in the back here. So I'm going to kind of lay this out. So it's going to go from there. I want it to come out to the front and say about an extra inch. So, and I'm going to cut it. Cut the ends here a little bit. Peel this apart each end. Cut in the middle there and peel that apart. Okay, now I'm going to strip off about a quarter inch of the insulation on all four here. So I'm just going to put it in my wire strippers and just eyeball it for about a quarter of an inch. Okay, for the end that goes on the battery, I have these little push-on terminals, and that just slides right down over the copper wires real easily. A blue dot up here, apparently for this size of lug. So I'm just going to put that in there and just squeeze that down real hard. I'm going to move it over and just kind of do it again. The red, I just do the same thing for the black. Okay, I push that down. I see the little bit of the copper extending past the blue. I put it in the crimper here and give that a big squeeze once. Move it and squeeze again, hard as I can. And I have that on now. If you remember from my $5 meter video, I wasn't sure what the saying was to know which way the connectors go. So what it is that if you position the red connector so you can read the A, so it's up and on the right, so red on right, read, so you can read the A, then the black, you orientate that so the connector is the same way, see the silver tab, and then it's going to slide in from the front. If I squeeze those together, that's now the correct pair. One of the things I like to do is orientate everything the way it's going to go together. So here's the connector, and the cable is this end here. So I want the red and the red to line up. I can see my tab is at the bottom side, so I want the little bend here in the connector, there you can kind of see it, to face away from that. So it's got to face up on the wire. So I'm going to put it on the wire here. So I'm going to slide that in there, and the tong is at the bottom. And if I crimp this now, got a big squeeze, and it pops open. I have that on there, and it's about the right direction. I can twist a little bit to make up for it. And now put the black one on, orientated the same way. Slide it in with a tab down here at the bottom, the wire net orientation. It's hard for you to see. Hold it around here like this. And give that a good squeeze, two hands. Line these up, straighten them up, and red to red, let's slide in. If everything goes right, this should go in and push. Click, click. There we go. I got my DC cable, my battery cable, put together. Okay, so let's put the power poles on the Turnigy power adapter. And one of the problems I was having is that the wires are really large and my connectors are not fitting on. So what I've had to do is take a knife and a screwdriver and kind of spread open the power pole connector. So in order to save some time here, I've slid the connectors on three of the wires here. So I have this side ready to crimp and this one here. So let's go ahead and crimp these. It's going to slide down in there like that. Crimp. Two hands. All the way. And then it releases. Connector in with the tab facing down. Goes into a cavity on the other side of the die. In there. Give that a good squeeze. In there like that. Hold, squeeze. Just do one at a time. Click the right way, yep. It's going to go in like that. Click. So I have this all on now. I've got all the ends on. This is done. Okay, the next thing is to put the power poles in the charging cable of the Genius 3500 battery charger. And we look at the end of the cable here. It has the alligator clips followed by a fuse, followed by their cable or their connector to plug on accessory cables. And so I think I'm going to, right about here, I'm just going to take this, and you know, we are ham radio operators, and we modify things. Strip off about a quarter inch or so of the insulation. Slides in, that makes that connection. Down in there, and crack. In. Okay, now I have my charger cable in two pieces, so I can plug this together when I want to use their bits. If I don't want to use them, I can just take that off and get rid of it. So now I can plug my charger directly into my battery. Slide the terminals on. So again, black on the negative. Push out a little hard. Here's my battery terminals. So here's the case from Amp 3, the FT817. So the way this works is that the battery tucks all the way down here in the back. And there's this little black Velcro thing that positioned down in there. Put the power cable behind it. And this goes right up against the front of the battery to protect it. Okay, I'm going to put the radio into the pack. I've disconnected the power cord. It slides under this elastic strap. And I'm going to hold the radio up like that for a second and reach in here and plug the power cable back on. And just slide this in. Push it back. Reach in there and, yep, it's all the way. And the power cable, I'm just going to jam that back along the side. And if I turn the radio on, you'll see the voltmeter from the internal battery, say 9.6. And if I plug this together, back on, and now it says 12.4. So I'm running off that battery. There's the radio side, the accessory side. I've got my antenna here with a right angle, so I can just slide into one of those little things there. I have my microphone. I can just store that in that pocket in the top. And if I had my coax and stuff ready to go, I could fill all that up with that and flips around. And zip it all up. This piece here on the Velcros, flip it up, put it back like that, tilts the radio up. You can open this back up while you're operating. And my 17 pack is ready to go. So maybe you'll see a video with this here in the future. Randy, K7AGE. Talk to you later. Oh, one more thing. I forgot. Show the Turnigy. And I have the Turnigy, and it's got source and load. So source is battery, so it'll go on the big cable. Plug that in. It lights up. Plug the radio in now. Turn the radio on. And it's showing 12.4. So it's 12.46 is what it shows on here. It's drawing 390 milliamps. And let's see what it is when I key up the radio. 2 amps and 23.8 watts. So 2 amps going in for transmit, K7AGE. 380 milliamps for receive. Huh, that's kind of a handy thing to have. Now I'm done. Bye-bye, K7AGE.
Well, thanks for that, Randy. I learned something out of that segment right there. The right way to put these things on, you know, I never knew that there was an A here on the end of them, but I checked mine as he was doing that, and I am putting them on the right direction, so that's good. And he showed you using a crimper for those. I had been using one like this in the past. It kind of worked. Not that great, so I would supplement it with a little solder too, and then I had a mess so big I couldn't hardly get it in the plastic shell. And then I got some of the same ones that he was using there. I picked these up over at Huntsville. These are the West Mountain Rodeo ones. They were kind of pricey. I think I paid $40 for them. But if you're going to do a lot of power pole connectors, these really do a good job of it. And I feel pretty good about the kind of crimp they're doing. I noticed in the chat room there were several people going back and forth on whether you should crimp those connectors on or whether you should solder them. Well, there's plus and minuses to both ways. I kind of like soldering crimp on connectors because I've seen so many bad ones in the past, and that just kind of firms it up. But if you got something that's drawing a lot of current, like maybe an HF rig, the solder could heat up and melt. So that's not necessarily good either. But I'm just going to leave you to your own on which way is right. I'm using the crimpers now, and these have done a good job on everything I've done with them so far. So I think I'm going to keep trying that. And if I don't feel good about a connection, I'll put some solder on there as well. And my friend Tommy over here, he was telling me that real men crimp those connectors with their teeth after they've stripped the wire with them. So, and that's probably the guys you see running around with bad teeth. But there's one more way to do it. I'm not going to recommend that one, though. And last week I asked a question, what does a servo use to determine its position? And, you know, the servo is, we were talking about the little standard servo like this one right here from High Tech. And I got an answer on that. It came from Kurt, WB9FMC. And he says servos of that type traditionally use a potentiometer. So congratulations, Kurt. You're our winner for this week. And you're going to get this high current voltage regulator. It's donated by N8WTT.com, Gary. And it's good for 8 to 16 volts input. It's going to give you 13.8 volts DC output. So that's good in using an NCOM or a Go Kit like Randy was doing there to kind of let you continue running after the battery voltage has dropped a little bit. This one has a blade type fuse in it, and it's good for up to fixed 15 amps max, LED indicator, and it is very lightweight, so it's not going to add much weight to your pack. For next week, I've got another question here, and this comes from the General Amateur Radio Exam. What is the minimum allowable discharge voltage for maximum life of a standard 12-volt lead amp battery, or excuse me, lead acid battery? And your choices are A, 6 volts, B, 8.5 volts, C, 10.5 volts, or D, 12 volts. And we're going to give away one of these DX Engineering extension speakers here. Great little speaker to give you a little more volume out of your ham rig. Certainly works a lot better than the internal speaker that's in any rig. These will really help you hear those signals. If you'd like to win that, well, then send your answer to that question to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be next week's lucky winner. For right now, we've got a word from ICOM about the D-Star QSO party that's coming up. Mark your calendars, D-Star fans. The D-Star QSO party is this month, and you're invited. Connect with the world via D-Star repeaters from Friday, September 19th through Sunday, September 21st. Contact ham radio operators around the world using D-Star. D-Star has helped amateur radio grow. It's an exciting technology that has introduced new people to the hobby, and it's been a great protocol for MCOM, too. Join the D-Star QSO party and communicate through D-Star repeaters. The more QSOs you make, the more chances you have to win. Multiply your chances of collecting points when you contact a set number of foreign countries. Earn up to one bonus point when you send GPS information indicating communication distance via the D-Star radio. Submit an approved log to be eligible for the prize drawing. Visit ICOM America's website for complete contest rules, log reporting, and more. The D-Star QSO Party winners will receive a brand new ID51A ICOM 50th Anniversary Limited Edition radio. 10 lucky winners will be randomly selected. Winners can only receive one prize and cannot choose the radio color. Only 5,000 ID51A units are available worldwide. The radio is available in five colors: blue, green, red, white, and black. Special edition radio features include faster data transfer on DV mode, RS-MS-1A Android app compatibility, additional D-plus reflector link commands, and other enhanced digital features. Make sure you visit iComAmerica.com/amateur for more information on the 2014 D-Star QSO party and the 50th anniversary limited edition ID-51A. And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to iComAmerica.com/HamNation and register to win some great prizes from iComSwagStore.com. They've got T-shirts, hats, and a lot more in there. And you're also going to be automatically entered in the monthly drawing for a grand prize, which is a radio. And for September, the grand prize is going to be the ICOM ID-31A. It's a submersible construction UHF handheld with D-Star, built-in GPS, micro SD card slot, automatic repeater list up, and a lot more. So go to iComAmerica.com/HamNation and register to win. And ICOM's also giving away a great prize package here in conjunction with Comet and MFJ. It's this ISD7100 that's sitting here right beside me. HF, 6-meter, VHF, UHF, all-mode rig with D-Star. And we're also giving away a little Tar Heel 2 screwdriver, or actually it's a little Tar Heel HD, the 500-watt model screwdriver, MFJ tuner for that, Comet dual-band antenna, and a couple of Comet mounts. So if you want to get in on that ICOM contest, go over to amateurlogic.tv and register to win in that 9th anniversary contest. So a couple of great prizes there from ICOM. You certainly ought to be throwing your name in the hat for those. Well, right now, let's go to Val and see what's going over in the DX. What are we calling it? DX Corner? Is that right, Val?
Yep, it's the DX Corner with Val. I guess that's what we can call it. Hey, who out there remembers FT5ZM, Amsterdam Island? I know I do. I worked them, and I was the pilot for that de-expedition. Well, that was one of the largest de-expeditions that went on. They spent over $450,000 to put that de-expedition together, and they had 14 operators from around the globe converging on Amsterdam Island, along with the support team. And that de-expedition actually won de-expedition of the year. There's the plaque right there, since I was part of the team. But the leader of that de-expedition was Dr. Ralph Fedor, K0IR. Well, he put together a video for Ham Nation on DXing and de-expeditions. So I hope you guys enjoy it.
One of the fascinating aspects of amateur radio is working DX. It's thrilling, challenging, you'll make some amazing friends, and it's not difficult to get started. When you sit down at your station, the question will be, where in the world will I go today? DX means distance, typically intercontinental contacts, like between North America and Europe, North America and Asia, or Asia and Australia. It's the thrill of those distant contacts that excites us. You hear a signal, tune it in, call the station, and the adventure begins. You may find yourself talking to someone in a large city like Perth in Western Australia, to a sheep farmer in the Falkland Islands, someone stationed at an Antarctic base, to an amateur radio operator at an old whaling station on South Georgia Island, or someone in a small village in the Kingdom of Bhutan. My friend Jorge in Colombia would enjoy a conversation with you. Learn about his country, its people, its history, its resources, and its cities. Perhaps you'll contact Nodir in Tajikistan. This is a country with one of the world's best-kept secrets, beautiful, rugged, backcountry scenery. You're likely to find amateur radio operators from Japan on the air nearly every day. My friend Hiro is likely to be one of them. Need a contact with Africa? My friend Neil would be happy to oblige. He'll have lots of adventure stories to share with you, both from inside and outside Africa. Perhaps your next contact will be with the land of the long white cloud, New Zealand. Lee, ZL2AL, would love to tell you about New Zealand. A land of lush mountainsides, high desert, unique geology, geothermal energy, a magnificent coastline, and beautiful alpine lakes. But wait a minute, you say. Wouldn't it be easier to make distant contacts with my cell phone or in a chat room? But why swim across the English Channel when you could take a boat? Why climb a mountain when you can take a helicopter to the top? Why go on a bike trail when you can drive by car? And there are other interesting challenges unique to amateur radio DXing. The activity of our sun and its sunspots influence radio communication. Some of these areas of intense magnetic activity are larger than our planet. Resultant radiation and particle streams from the sun interact with Earth's magnetic field, effect ionization in our atmosphere, and may enhance or degrade radio communication. Understanding the process will enhance your DXing skills. Your contacts with new countries and entities become like a rare coin to a coin collector or a rare stamp to a stamp collector. But how about those places on Earth where there are no amateur radio operators to contact? Places where there may not even be any people? That's where de-expeditions come into play. For example, the icebound, uninhabited island of Peter I lies below the Antarctic Circle. Putting it on the air requires a de-expedition team to go there. To access this island requires a helicopter to bring everything and everyone ashore. Shelters must be built and the camp established. All this needs to be done within weather windows. Then, guys like these bundle up and hand out worldwide contacts with Peter I. Cygni Island in the South Orkneys is somewhat easier to access, but still in Antarctic Treaty territory. Once again, amateur radio operators worldwide follow the de-expedition's progress and vie for the coveted contacts. Would you like it hot? Try the steep, barren rock called Malpelo off the coast of Colombia. Getting on this rock is not easy. First you're hoisted, and then you climb. Finally, the team reaches its operating site and makes an amazing 195,000 contacts with other ham operators around the world. In January of 2014, a de-expedition team sailed from Western Australia with only seabirds for company and sunsets for variety. Their destination? A small dot in the middle of the Indian Ocean. Amsterdam Island. After 9 days at sea, covering 1,900 nautical miles, they arrived. The team landed, set up their stations, worked around the clock, and stayed on the air for just over 2 weeks. They made just over 170,000 contacts, giving many radio amateurs a new country contact. These are the 14 men who ventured to Amsterdam to hand out those contacts and so enjoyed saying hello to old friends and making so many new friends through amateur radio and DXing. We all enjoy the chase and the challenge of DX, but what endures is the friendships we forge. Thanks to DXing and DXpeditions, we have lifelong friends all over the world. I ask you, how do you top that?
All right, if that doesn't want to make you chase some DX, I don't know what will. So speaking of DX, coming up right now, we got a lot of DX because fall's in the air. So there's a little more DX and contesting starting to happen here. Right now, Echo 30 Foxtrot Bravo Zorro is in Eritrea. Actually, he just got spotted on 14.217 if you want to go work him. He's listening up. The last time someone was there was in 2001. He's there for a humanitarian effort, so he's working he's working radio when he can in his spare time. Also, Nigel, Zulu Delta 9 X-ray Foxtrot, is on the air right now in Tristan da Cunha, if you need that one. He's mostly a CW guy, but he hopes to be using RIDI, be on RIDI towards the end of his stay there, and he's going to be there till the 3rd of October. This weekend also is the 50th anniversary for Market Reef and Oscar Hotel 2 Bravo Hotel. Marty Lane, big famous, probably the most famous de-expeditioner out there. And Oscar Hotel 9 Mike. They're both going to try and land on Market Reef this weekend. Hopefully that'll happen. And they're going to be doing real and virtual amateur radio, which is kind of interesting. They're going to be trying to set up a satellite broadband link with Finland. So look for that. As far as there's a lot more DX, but that's the major ones. But as far as contesting goes this weekend, we have the ARRL 10 gigahertz and up contest. The South Carolina CUSO party is going on this weekend. You also heard Gordo talk about the D-Star CUSO party. Also, the Washington CUSO party is this weekend, but that's not what they call it. They call it the Salmon Run. So get on the air and help those guys out. Also, here's your chance to dust off your parrots and air out your parrots and dust off your eye patches because the pirate CUSO party's going on this weekend. I was reading the rules, and this thing looks like a blast. You're going to be broken out into red pirates and black pirates based on your call sign. And there's a lot of fun things in there. You start off with like 30 virtual doubloons, and also you can make the other guy walk the plank. If he's calling CQ and you work him and he's a black pirate and you're a red pirate or vice versa, you can tell him to walk the plank and he has to move 5 kilohertz away and you can take over the frequency. There's a lot of fun things in this contest. Too many rules to name off right now. So that's going on. Also, I wanted to see if you notice what's going on behind me on the screen here. Chip K9MIT gave me the idea of, what do you do with those QSL cards that you get? No one really can use them as wallpaper or whatever, but you have all these QSL cards. Take pictures of them. I threw it on a PowerPoint presentation. I just have a virtual thing running in the background, and it's a great conversation when people walk in. Also, you can put it on the digital photo frames and just have those running in your living room or rec room or in your shack, wherever. So that was a great idea sent by Chip. And last, Brian, if you want to show that antenna photo, I just want to let you know we're working on the antennas here, getting them ready for the fall. We're going to be a Whiskey One Alpha Whiskey station here, the main one. So we want to get a lot of stuff up in the air. And I don't know if you can see Tim Whiskey 3 Yankee Quebec up there on that tower, but he is a seasoned professional climber. And I thought, you know, while he's here, we're going to work and do a presentation on tower safety. It's been a long time coming. I think it's a necessary thing that everybody needs to be aware of. So look for that in the next my next episode, hopefully, if not 2 weeks after that. But I'm going to try to get that on right away because that's a real important thing as everybody gets ready to get their antennas up this season. And that's all I have. So I'm going to head it over to Don, who's going to give you the news line.
Great stuff, Val. Thanks a lot. You know, another good thing to do with your QSL cards is throw them in your computer. Scan them, throw them in your computer. Every computer has a screensaver program. Just make them rotate as your screensaver. Good stuff. Love the DXing. You're making me get the itch. But right now, let's go and check with the news from Amateur Radio Newsline.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1935, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, September 17th, 2014. Hot on the tail of last week's announcement by Japan that it plans to send a ham radio payload to an asteroid, comes word that China will send some ham radio gear around the moon and then bring it back. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3 TZD.
The ham radio payload is known as 4MLXS. and is slated for launch as part of 196-hour China-sponsored moon circling mission in late October. The amateur radio payload will weigh only 30 pounds and will transmit on 145.98 megahertz, plus or minus 2.9 kilohertz. The transmitter will be able to produce 1.5 watts, feeding a simple monopole antenna. This should give a signal-to-noise ratio comparable to amateur moon bounce signals returning at the Earth's surface. During a lunar flyby, the spacecraft will be 248,000 miles from Earth, and the distance to the moon from the spacecraft will be between 7,500 to 15,000 miles, depending on the final injection vector. The continuous transmissions will start at 77.8 minutes after launch, with five successive one-minute sequences sent during each five-minute transmit cycle. The digital mode JT65B will be used so hams using the free WJST software can decode it. Lux Space is encouraging radio amateurs around the world to receive the transmissions and send in data that they can capture. A Java client will be made available to automatically send the decoded files to a central database. That address will be made available before the flight on the Lux Space Facebook page. The launch is expected to take place on October 23rd at 1800 UTC.
Slow scan television appears to be once again operational from the International Space Station. On Saturday, September 6th, the ISS slow scan television experiment was activated from the Russian service module on 145.800 megahertz FM, this following an unsuccessful test back on August 27th using the Kenwood TM-D710 transceiver and a new cable that was not entirely successful. At that time, only the carrier was detected, but no SSTV audio tones were heard. By September 6th, the earlier issue was rectified and radio amateurs on the ground were treated to a day of slow scan television transmissions of images devoted to the life and work of Russia's first cosmonaut, Yuri Gagarin. If propagation seems a bit strange lately, blame it on the sun, as we hear from Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW.
At 030 hours on the morning of September 9th, the magnetic canopy of sunspot AR2158 erupted, producing a long-duration solar flare and a bright coronal mass ejection, better known as a CME. The CME, which shot away from the sun at nearly 1,000 kilometers a second, had an Earth-directed component. As such, space scientists said that a glancing but powerful blow was possible during the late hours of September 11th or in the early hours of September 12th. NOAA forecasters then issued a geomagnetic storm warning for September 12th, noting that the storm could reach a G2 class moderate intensity event, with auroras visible across northern tier U.S. states, such as Maine, Michigan, and Minnesota. Most of the storm cloud was heading north of the Sun-Earth line, but not all.
More information on these events is always available at spaceweather.com. The cost of a U.S. amateur vanity call sign is going up from the current $16.10 to $21.40 for a 10-year term, the largest upward adjustment in many years. The new fee goes into effect 30 days after publication in the Federal Register. Ohio's Westchester Amateur Radio Association will be celebrating the 70th anniversary of the decommissioned Voice of America Bethany Relay site Saturday, September 20th. The club makes its home in the VOA building and operates station WC8VOA, which is the call they will use for the commemorative event. The location is also the home of the Voice of America Museum of Broadcasting. More about the museum can be found on the web at www.voamuseum.org. The club's website is wc8voa.org. And finally this week, another of America's true heroes is passed on. Lifelong amateur radio operator and World War II veteran George T. Mitchell, K6ZE of San Diego, California, passed away September 4th at the age of 94. During World War II, George T. Mitchell was a member of the pioneering black aviators known as the Tuskegee Airmen. Mitchell, who built his first amateur station at age 12, was responsible for teaching radio operations and Morse code to the aviation cadets at the Tuskegee Institute in Alabama from 1943 to 1946. Following the war, he went to work as a civilian engineer for the United States Navy. He retired to San Diego, but eventually returned to work for the Scripps Institute of Oceanography. In 2007, in recognition of his service with the Tuskegee Airmen, K6ZE was a co-recipient of the Congressional Gold Medal, which is the United States' highest civilian award. George T. Mitchell was a member of many amateur radio groups, including the OMIC Amateur Radio Association, the Air Force Flyers Club, the Old Old Timers Club, and the Quarter Century Wireless Association. He was a member of the B.O. Davis chapter of the Tuskegee Airmen's Association and frequently spoke to school and civic groups about the role these American heroes played in our nation's history. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news brought to you each and every week for over 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW 73, and we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And kind of sad news about the gentleman from the Tuskegee Airmen passing away, but very cool. He was a ham, so We're losing more and more of those World War II veterans every day. And my dad was a World War II vet. So anytime Val talks about DX petitions from the Pacific, that's where my dad was. He was in the Pacific Theater. It always piques my interest. Chat room is going crazy tonight. We've got a lot of good stuff on there. And I think we're trying to get Amanda, get her audio and video all tightened up. So as soon as we hear that it's going well, we'll go to Amanda. But George, did you have anybody in World War II in your family that that fought over there?
Yeah, Don, my father fought in World War II. He's 92 years old now. He was in the Navy and was an airplane mechanic. He worked some on a aircraft carrier, but he was stationed in Hawaii. But that was after Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. One of the coolest memories, of course, New Orleans is where the National World War II Museum is. And some years ago, a friend of mine who I worked with in broadcasting invited me and my son Tyler to go with him and his family and his dad to the World War II Museum. And his dad was in the 101st Airborne, and he was there at D-Day. He was on Omaha Beach, and he was stationed with the gliders. You know, about 90% of those guys died that day trying to land those gliders on the beach in support of the ground troops. And he survived, and so we got to go with him and his family as their guest, and that was just the best memory I think I can remember about that. In fact, I've got some of my dad's World War II stuff. I'm seriously thinking about donating to the World War II Museum. Let's see if we have Amanda. Amanda, how are you tonight, and are you with us?
We're still working on Amanda.
Still working on Amanda. Okay.
She's got. She can't hear us at the moment, so we're working.
Ah,
on
her. Okay.
Hey, Don.
Yes, sir.
My wife was watching some World War II movies here a while back. I think it was a special World War II in HD. And she said, I wonder why they don't have World War I in HD.
They barely had D in World War I.
Yeah.
Let alone H. Grainy film stuff. But, it's very... In fact, I have one of the things that I have... My dad never talked about the war too much, but I do have... What I think was his sidearm. He you know, of course, they all carried the Colt 45 automatics, and my 45 automatic, I can't ask him if it was his because he's passed on, but it'll be 100 years old next year, and it says property United States on the slide. So it's definitely a World War I, World War II vintage gun, and I think it may very well be the one that he carried in World War II, and so that's something that I will never part with. Even if it's not, it's nice to think that maybe it is, and there's a good chance that it is. So, anyway,
yeah.
And anything about the expeditions to the Pacific or any of those World War II theaters, whether the Pacific or the Atlantic, it just thrills me to death.
We've got Amanda really back, does. Guys.
We have Amanda. Amanda, chat room, darling, how are you? Come and save us from ourselves.
Oh, I'm sorry. You guys have been ad-libbing all night long. I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for your patience. Appreciate it. Let me get started. I know we've been wasting a little bit of time here. So first, let me give you some announcements. We have KM4EHD, new licensee. We have Nancy, who's upgraded to General. That's K4NAD. And also Spike K6PER has upgraded to Extra. And very special one here, Brianna is now also a ham, KE0ATZ. So let's give them a round. Yay. And okay, so I got some questions for you guys. First of all, great segments tonight. Was really great. And definitely Gordo, what he did tonight. Let's go to, I have a question for you, Don. W3DDT Walt would like to know, do you recommend using a dielectric waterproofing filler inside PL259 connectors?
I do, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I think that anything you can do to help keep the water out of there, I mean, you need to put the coax seal around there and then plus tape. And yeah, if you can squeeze that full of silicone or anything to keep the water out, yeah, anything you can do to keep the water out is definitely a good thing.
Okay, very good. And then we have KD2EPQ, Pierre, and this is for you, George. He wants to know, if N-type connectors are best for 440 megahertz, why do most dual-band radios come with SO239 connectors?
Probably because they're a little bit cheaper, and most of our antennas not all of them, but most of them do have PL259s on them. So I would suspect that's the reason behind it.
Okay, thank you. And Pierre, I hope that answered that for you. And now, Miss Val, I've got a question for you too. I'm going to get to their name here. I'm sorry, they didn't have a name. This was just a web user. What do you use in the way of mic compression for your DXing?
I use Heil everything. I just set it on. I'm right in the middle. I put everything right in the middle. So I'm pretty much. I don't have any set thing. I think I'm on like 5 on my mic compression. So that's it.
I can answer that question. It just so happens that I changed microphones tonight, and I've got my old gold line on here. And this has 2 elements in it. It has the rag chewing element, which I'm on now, and plus it has the HC4, which is the DX element. Now, normally I use my PR40 studio mic, and I jack it into another input on my mixer, which I have all the highs up and all the lows and mids down. But what's nice about this is I flip this switch, and now you can hear the difference. And this is harsh, and it's horrible to listen to. But let me tell you something. It will cut through the noise. So get you something like this Heil Gold Line with the contesting element in it, and it will make a world of difference between cutting through the crap and not cutting through the crap.
Oh, I would agree. That sounded – you could tell the difference right away on that. Thank you, Don. Thanks, Val. And George, I've got a question from here in the homestead. Jeff K0JSC would like to know, is there any way to connect a Signal Link and an Alesis mixer to the accessory port at the same time? Because right now we have to reach back there and switch, and we've been kind of not being so much involved in doing PSK digital modes because we have to do that.
Well, I don't have a Signal Link, but I suspect that you could just take the Signal Link and run it into the mixer itself so that only the mixer is connecting to the accessory port. If you've got enough inputs on your mixer, you should be able to do that.
Okay. I was just asking Jeff if he actually heard that. He said no. So I'll make sure he watches this show later on and he can get that answer. Thank you, George, so much. With that, I just wanted to kind of talk about the APRS a bit more, just like Gordo is going over. We're using it this weekend for a special event. Our Aries group is supporting a Bikes and Brews event here. So what it is a 100-mile bike ride, and then they're going to go through to the park and have beer. So we're sending out some APRS units out there to follow their track, plus some sag wagons and mobile units to follow them as well. So I look forward to using APRS that way. It's the first time we're doing it here locally, so look forward to it. And just a couple other things, you guys, some announcements about HamFest. Bill wanted us to know that there's one in Gainesville, Texas on September 27th. And this weekend coming up, K9EID, Ron wanted us to know that there is one all weekend in Peoria, Illinois. So I'll send it back to you, George.
Well, thanks, Amanda. Some good questions there from the chat room tonight. And we hope you've enjoyed tonight's show. Bob is going to be out for the next 2 weeks, as far as we know, but we're going to continue on here. Gordo and everyone else will be back with us next week. And Dale will be in here with some more of your viewer-submitted videos. So that's going to be fun, too. Before we go, though, let's check in with everybody and see if we have any last-minute words of wisdom there. So we'll go to Don first.
Wisdom?
Wisdom, yes.
I got nothing.
You got nothing.
I have some words. You guys, okay. I forgot to mention one thing. KC9RIJ wanted to remind us all to take a look at tower safety once again as he lost a good friend from his ham club this weekend. So I'm sorry I missed that earlier, but just a reminder. Go ahead, Don.
All right. George, is there any way to turn your shirt down?
Oh. No, it's all the way down already. There's not much I can do about it. I'll just have to wait till the battery gets weak, I guess. Yeah, and Amanda, thanks for that. That's very important information. Guys, be careful when you're doing tower work. If you don't know what you're doing, don't go up there yourself. Find someone who does, because
exactly.
That, yeah, that works there. Ooh, very, yeah. Very dangerous stuff. And let's check in with Val. Val, any final words of wisdom from you?
No, you know that Eritrea that I was talking about, he is now on 245. I was just trying to work him. I hope no one heard me, but he's working split. He's working up 5 to 10. And also the 20-meter net is on 14.284. I'm not sure where the 40-meter net is. Do you guys know where all that's going on?
I suspect it's going to be somewhere around 7.278, unless Amanda knows.
The last I saw was 7278.
All right, and there's also 80-meter net going on 3.850, so check that one out. Also, we've got the D-Star net. That's going to be on Reflector 14 Module C, and the Echo Link net is on Star Dewdrop M Star node number 355-800. Well, thanks for joining us tonight. Great show as usual. Glad you could all be here. And we'll see y'all again next week. 73.